The formative years are so important and shape one's life. When I grew up in Regina, Saskatchewan, I attended Sunday school, youth group on Sunday evenings, and CGIT on Thursday evenings. Canadian Girls in Training was led by the ladies of the church. When I was 15, the youth entered a guidance class to prepare us for joining the church. Our minister was our special guest, who guided us into the Presbyterian faith. We were taught that Jesus was our Savior, that he performed miracles, and walked on water. I can still recite the Apostles' Creed with my eyes closed. One Wednesday evening, while we were prepped on the answers to the Presbyterian Confession of Faith, my friend Jim Stevens and I expressed doubts. Just little doubts. Like we had learned in science class about gravity and wondered how someone could walk on water. Birth control pills were the talk at our high school, and we had heard about sex without marriage. We wondered how Mary got pregnant without the collision of a sperm and an egg. There were things in the New Testament that did not make sense. Together, Jim and I expressed these doubts to our minister. His response was, "If you have doubts, don't join the church." So we both quit going to church. We were doubting Thomas's. The minister was fired shortly after this. I didn't think that was going to get a laugh. And it took several years for me to find a church community where I felt comfortable. Recently, I saw Jim again at our 50-year high school reunion and discovered that he has never gone to church again. My spiritual journey was very different. I became involved in activism. Saskatchewan, under a socialist government at that time, nationalized the resources so people of the province had control over their land and resources. It was the birthplace of Medicare in Canada. The University of Regina became the place that American professors whose careers were stifled by McCarthyism in the US came to teach. I became interested in power, abuse, land rights, climate change, the ruling class, liberation theology, exploitation, homelessness, the Crusades, the number of people killed in the name of religion. I began reading Spong, Borg, Crossan, and others. I explored alternative interpretations of the Bible. I gave up on the dichotomous concept of good and evil and heaven and hell. I became a progressive Christian with views that did not fit with the traditional church. I demonstrated, marched, waved banners, wrote letters to the editor. I worked at a refugee camp in Asia. I wrote a book about the disparity in healthcare for Indigenous people in Canada. It is the story of my personal struggle with colonialism, elitism, privilege, and white skin. So how did I get to CMCL? As we heard in the Isaiah scripture, the Bible has poetry. Soar on the wings of eagles, a phrase that has been co-opted by the US military. When I moved to the United States from Canada in the mid-1980s, for my postgraduate training at the University of Chicago, I became aware that attending church in the United States was a way to meet people. It was a social club with a social conscience. Over the next 25 years, I joined churches to find community, and the denomination did not matter to me. After I moved to Pennsylvania in 2005, a friend of my mother's connected me to Urban Peachy, who invited me to CMCL. I found a community of like-minded people. I am still a doubting Thomas. when I watch the news, I don't know what to believe. Now, in this world, we have social media, trolls, media manipulation, gun violence, Christian nationalism, conspiracy theories. The gap between the rich and the poor widens. Donkey Don speaks the language of the downtrodden. As a dual citizen of Canada and the United States, I'm embarrassed to admit that Canada in the 1940s also turned away Jews fleeing persecution and sent them back to Germany. They were afraid. The fear of accepting others has resulted in a volatile situation in the Middle East. So what to believe? Let's go back to the Doubting Thomas story from the New Testament. I don't have a lot of experience with dead people who show up at a dinner party in a locked room. But I do understand the disciples were afraid. Their leader had just been killed. What did Jesus say when he entered the room? Peace be with you. These are words of gratitude that give hope. I recently went to Spain on a family history exploration with Jan Siemens. Every night in our hotel room, we would review the day's activities and count the number of angels that we had met. People who went out of their way to help us, people that provided us with insights about the culture around us, people who pointed us in the right direction. Yes, I do believe in angels. As Christians, we struggle with how to solve the world issues around us. We can wallow in fear, disdain, outrage, and inaction. We can hold on to the way that we have done things in the past because it feels safe. In recent years, neuroscientists have discovered that fear and gratitude don't exist in the same parts of the brain. Fear resides in the amygdala, the reptilian part of the brain. Feelings of gratitude activate the neocortex, the front part of the brain, with our higher thinking abilities. Researchers now know that gratitude actually processes fear, effectively driving fear out, giving us the possibility of acting with courage, hope, and compassion. On this Thanksgiving weekend, I believe in gratitude. Peace be with you.
Two months ago, Sebastian and I were wandering around County Park, and I found some American persimmon trees. I squeezed the fruit. They felt soft. They felt ripe. I had a bite. If you've ever had an unripe American persimmon, it tastes like stuffing your mouth full of cotton balls and then some other weird... It's just very unpleasant. And Sebastian was quite upset that I wouldn't share with him. I told him he wouldn't like it. He was still very upset I wouldn't share with him. So I was like, eh, you pick your battles, right? So you can have a bite. The whole way home, he's like, told you. So we went back about a month later when they were actually ripe. And it was my job to find the trees. We shook the trees together, and Sebastian ran around picking persimmons off the ground faster than I could tell him to spit the seeds out of his mouth. I wish I had captured in video, or I wish you had even been there to see the just pure joy on his face, seeing literal manna fall from the heavens. That's why I believe in trees. If an inventor announced tomorrow they had created a carbon capture machine that was practically free to produce and could be stored in every backyard and vacant lot across the world, she would instantly be given a Nobel Prize. Imagine if she went on to announce that this machine was solar-powered, self-replicating, and additionally, it has a number of byproducts. Instead of toxic gas or runoff, this machine produces spices, some textiles, some medicines, and even, and often, nutritious edible foods. If this inventor made these kinds of claims, we would either elect her supreme leader of the world or do what we've done to most prophets and lock her away and ignore her. A machine like that would change the world, and yet we've always had that in trees. The generosity of trees has always been unmatched. our species once lived in deep unity with these spectacular beings. Here in the Americas, we cultivated thousands upon thousands of acres of gardens composed primarily of large perennial fruit and nut trees and shrubs. Colonizers tore down these diverse and self-sustaining gardens to make room for a small handful of labor-intensive crops. We once lived in harmony with the trees. We cared for them, and they fed, clothed, and healed us. I believe the only way forward for our species is to learn to live with these beautiful beings once again. I believe that trees are the only future for humanity. I hope you all do what you can to plant, care for, and harvest from these unbelievably generous beings. I encourage you to spread the seeds of white oak trees, which are an incredible source of food for caterpillars and thus birds in our ecosystem. I encourage you to shove cuttings of elderberry plants in the ground in any vacant lot you can find. They produce beautiful white flowers and then purple berries, which can be used for a wonderful immune-boosting medicine for humans and also feeding birds and local animals. And I encourage you to plant hickory and hazelnut trees to grow nutritious, protein-packed food for yourself and all the critters around you. If nothing else, just dig up your grass lawns and plant any kind of tree or shrub. The generosity of these beings is unmatched. As Khalil Gibran said, "The trees of the orchard give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish." Let us all learn from the trees.
This I believe. Without the Buddha, I could not be a Christian. The book by that title was written by Paul F. Kitner. The other book that I use in my reading this morning is the Bible, which was written by a whole bunch of people, and two other books, The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van Kolk, and Velvet Rage by Alan Downs. I might get emotional during this. I'm just going to warn you. My spirituality has four elements: sharing pain, serving others, joining hands or forces, and making a leap. Each of these involves love and risk. So here goes my leap with CMCL joining hands. My childhood religious beliefs were rooted in the Roman Catholic faith, based totally for me in fear and hidden rage. I'm a survivor of physical, mental, spiritual, sexual abuse as a child, and I was gang raped in the military as an adult. Our dysfunctional household was an abusive, chaotic, and alcoholic family. I went into the Army after graduation to get away from the chaos. Imagine that. I'm a disabled veteran for being a military sexual trauma survivor. I'm a gay man. In moments like this, when I glance backward and feel the tide of life and memory rushing forward, I'm torn between gratitude for what was given and longing for what was lost. Growing up a gay man in a straight man's world, deeply ingrained shame for who I am, and deeper embedded shame for being an HIV undetectable gay man with a husband who is not HIV positive. For so many gay men, the shame of being HIV positive runs a deeper, more destructive course than the shame over being gay ever within the LGBTQ, even within the LGBTQIA plus community. It becomes something of a lifelong reminder that we are somehow flawed, and enlivens the deeply held sinister belief that perhaps living with HIV is physical evidence of our own unlovableness. I share with you this hard-won self-acceptance, which is so critically important to me. I hope to reach out to all straight, gay, HIV positive, to offer compassion, acceptance, and most of all, the hope that comes from knowing that no matter what you have done, you are worthy of love. And God knows you and loves you just the way you are. For we are known and loved by God. While in the military, I got involved with a Bible study after being in the service for 9 years, military service for 9 years. During that Bible study, with my commanding officer, no less, I came to a peace position and was honorably discharged with the support of a beachy Amish Mennonite community in Catlett, Virginia. One of my closest friends was the bishop, Simon Schrock. Some of you might know him. I tended to stay in strict legalistic groups, mostly out of my own guilt and shame, and need to be accepted and experience God's love. I didn't get it in those belief systems. I just could not pray the gay away. Then I got in recovery from drugs, codependency, sex and love addiction, and I went on a retreat with Thich Nhat Hanh, for Vietnamese era veterans from all over the world, including Vietnamese veterans. I've been heavily influenced by this humble monk. I began to practice Buddhist meditation and frequent 10-day Vipassana retreats on a regular basis, along with regular 12-step recovery meetings. This became my spiritual path of recovery for many, many years, and my path back to Christian beliefs based on love alone. However, the 12 steps of SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, and the Buddhist influence radically changed my views on life, God, and community. Am I right where I want to be right now? No, and I never will be. Never will be. But I have a path that I can be happy traveling. Does doubt ever interfere with my heart-acquired faith? Of course it does. As Hermann Hesse says in Magister Ludicrous, he had already learned that faith and doubt belong together, that they govern each other like inhaling and exhaling. I now have something to go with my faith and doubt. Hope. Something I had never experienced in my entire life. Today, this is what I believe. I believe I see God in you. In closing, I'd like to share some of my poetry that sums up my beliefs. Imago Dei. I have seen God face to face. Genesis 32:30. I'm irritated by crazy drivers, pedantic religious leaders. I'm outraged by the lack of justice, these endless forms forming me. I'm blinded by my own self-righteousness and self-centeredness from seeing these faces of God. It was comfortable thinking of God as an old white-bearded man sitting off somewhere called heaven. I was really blind to your image. I never thought of you as old, as rich, as young, as a person of color, as a woman, as a man, as a lesbian, as a gay, as a straight, as a bisexual, as a transgender, as suffering, as healing, as giving birth, as dying. This takes some getting used to. You have so many faces, each one so different, yet the same. and it throws me back to my original quandary of what you look like. However, now there is a difference. I don't have to get away from the crowd to find you, for seeing you is seeing the face of God. 1. God will judge among the nations. They will beat their swords into plowshares, Isaiah 2:4. Complexity of modern awareness, making marching off to battle, singing a mighty fortress is our God, sung to squash the social uprisings, seem pedantic to me. God bless America, land that I love. Onward, Christian soldiers. Jihad Akbar. Who's God? La ilaha illallah. The Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God. The Lord is one. Is not our God their God as well? Whose side is God on? If God is in our wars, he is on both sides. She is on both sides, looking out the eyes of the orphan, crying in anguish over lost loved ones, broken from wounds of battle, beating in the hearts of the young, fearful of wounds and death, bleeding when wounded bleed, crying over our inhumanity to humanity, sobbing over our deafness and blindness. Shall we continue in our inhumanity to one another, to ourselves? For we are all one.